Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what is going on? And welcome back to WWE Rivalries with your host, yours truly, Anthony DeMarco. You can find me at ADeMarco25 on Twitter if you guys want to get in touch. And I hope you guys are doing well. We are September 10th when I'm recording this, Thursday, September 10th, but you will be listening to it most likely on September 11th. So, back by popular demand, or should I say brought to you by popular demand, we have this week's feature rivalry of Edge versus John Cena. And I'm going to focus on their one that really ran through the better part of 2006. I don't want to make this huge story-long rivalry when it spilled into the World Heavyweight Championship picture leading up to WrestleMania 25, when they had the triple threat match with the Big Show that was mainly a part of SmackDown. I'm going to focus mainly on the 2006 version of Edge versus John Cena, because as I've said before, I wasn't too in touch with the product in the year 2009 or 2010, whenever that was. But to be quite honest, I think their rivalry in 2006 was the best part of it, as it was a catapult for Edge, and it was one of the first big rivalries for John Cena as a main event star. But before we get to that, I'm just going to give you a few of my thoughts on the current WWE product at hand. So we'll start firstly with the talk of the town, and that is a heel Roman Reigns who is set to go one-on-one with his cousin Jey Uso. Look, there's no way Jey Uso is going to win. This is clearly a means to an end type of storyline and program. And that end being solidifying Roman Reigns as a true top heel. Look, I think that it's going to be a slow burn with Reigns going to a full heel mode. And I think there's no better way to start that off by making him go up against his family member and a crowd favorite in one of the Uso brothers. I'm interested to see how they play this out over the coming weeks, how the interactions between Jey Uso and Roman Reigns are. Because, look, for all intents and purposes, Jey Uso has no business being in this match, had no business being in the number one contenders match, just no business being around the Universal Championship picture. Like, I don't even think he's had a one-on-one opportunity for a singles title at all, including the Intercontinental or United States Championship. So look, we're going to throw logic to the wayside and just look at it for the betterment of this program and this storyline, which it is. To be quite honest, I can't think of a better first one-on-one guy to go up against Roman Reigns than a family member to really push home the narrative that he is a true top heel. So I'm really looking forward to that. And to be quite honest, SmackDown as a whole, I think, has been doing very, very well of late. I love what they're doing with the Intercontinental Championship picture, bringing back Sami Zayn. And, you know, he comes from the same place in Montreal that I do, so I got a kick out of him speaking French. Just overly obnoxious type of character. I really missed him on television. And then him involved with Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles, I just think it's a great mid-card type of feud for SmackDown right now, and I just think as a whole they are doing very well. The Bayley turn on Sasha Banks, I didn't know they were going to do it that fast. I thought they were going to let it drag on for a bit longer, but hey, they did it excellently. I'm here for it. SmackDown as a whole is really doing well. And I think I touched on it last week, but I'm enjoying it a lot more than Monday Night Raw as of right now. And even the tag team division. Like, I know that we haven't really seen Cesaro and Nakamura engage in any type of feud strictly on SmackDown. Obviously, they showed up on Raw this week to come face-to-face with the Street Profits. But the way that they've given Nakamura and Cesaro screen time to kind of push home the fact of, you know, the Champions Lounge and the Champions Champagne, I think it's been really cool. I like Cesaro and Nakamura. I think they've just fit like a glove with one another for a tag team. So as a whole, I'm really intrigued on what's going on SmackDown. As for Monday Night Raw, hasn't been bad, but I'm starting to get a bit tired. Like, I'll just say it, Mysterio family, cannot stand them, cannot take any more of it. Dominic coming out there looking like Power Ranger, beating up Murphy, which I don't understand what the point of that was. I think Murphy becoming a jobber to the Mysterio family is a joke, quite honestly. As for the main event feud, look, I'm still invested in Orton versus McIntyre, but at the same time, I feel like the injection of Keith Lee into that program has really hurt Randy Orton in particular. It's almost like he has two foes right now. I know that they had Keith Lee say like that Drew better not interfere in his match again and whatnot, but I just don't think that's where Keith Lee needed to be. And I love Keith Lee. He has a bright future on the main roster. But just any other type of program would have been better suited for Keith Lee. I thought they were doing an excellent job with pushing Randy Orton as the true top heel in the company. And in professional wrestling as a whole, maybe rivaled by MJF in AEW. But They cooled them off, the back-to-back losses in the same week by the roll-up, and then the powerbomb by Keith Lee, or I forget what his version of the powerbomb is called. But I don't really like what they've done with Orton in the past few weeks. Even Drew getting the three claymores on him this week, I feel like they've really halted the momentum of Randy Orton, and kind of disappointed there, to be quite honest. Then the biggest positive, though, of Monday Night Raw is the Hurt Business. I love it. Absolutely great. They've taken three, I would say, obscure and random and insignificant guys in MVP and Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. And we can't lump Bobby Lashley into that mix because he did have a solid run going on even before the Hurt Business showed up. But they have really taken Raw by the horns and, in my opinion, are the most entertaining part of the show right now. I really love what they're doing. I really hope to God that on two of the members tag team together and take the tag team championships away from the Street Profits. I think that's what this faction needs. Hopefully it would be Shelton and Cedric Alexander. Or MVP and Cedric Alexander. Just Cedric Alexander would have to be involved. I love him joining the group. But I'm hoping that they get more gold around their waist, as Bobby Lashley is already the United States champion. So look, all positives across the board for SmackDown. Not so much for Monday Night Raw. But it isn't awful by any means. I just think that for whatever reason, it's kind of become a bit redundant on Monday Night Raw, especially the Mysterio thing. And I don't mean to keep coming back and rehashing and whatnot, but my God, I am just so done with that whole Mysterio Seth Rollins thing. And Dominic, I don't know, there's something unlikable about him. Maybe it's the Power Ranger costume, not too sure there, but certainly has not been my cup of tea. But look, let's get to the reason why you guys are here, and that is WWE rivalries. And brought to you by popular demand, I know a lot of you guys emailed Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com to express your interest in me taking a episode to focus on Edge versus John Cena. And look, I had that one sitting in the back pocket and I was going to do it anyway. No, I'm just kidding. I definitely thought about doing it for a couple weeks now, but figured I might as well do it right now, seeing as though so many of you wanted to hear about it. So like I said, I'm going to concentrate on their feud in 2006 that culminated at the Unforgiven pay-per-view following SummerSlam. So to bring you back to 2005 a bit, to really set the stage for where these two guys were coming from and how they led to be, how they ended up being against one another, rather. In 2005, WrestleMania 21, this was a big pay-per-view for setting the stage as to where John Cena and Edge were heading for the succeeding year, year and a half, even 2 years. So at this time, John Cena was the number one contender for JBL's WWE Championship over on SmackDown. And at this time, SmackDown was really going through a changing of the guard for who their top face was going to be, and their top heel for that matter. As you may have recalled, Brock Lesnar had left the company the year before. They had just gone through the Eddie Guerrero WWE Championship run that ended at the previous Great American Bash in June of 2004. And JBL was on a 9-month run as WWE Champion. And he faced off against guys like Eddie Guerrero, Booker T, Undertaker, Big Show, and he fought them all off. And lo and behold, John Cena, who was fresh off of a year of being the U.S. champion on and off, having a lengthy feud with Booker T, the debuting Carlito, ended up losing it to the chief of staff, to JBL, Orlando Jordan, and had never been a champion other than the U.S. champion to this point in his career. So following the No Way Out pay-per-view of 2005, John Cena faced off against or embarked on a program with John Bradshaw Layfield, his first ever main event feud, which he ended up winning the WWE Championship from him at WrestleMania 21 in 2005. Meanwhile, over on Raw was enjoying some of its best time during the Ruthless Aggression era, in my honest opinion, because at this time, Batista and Triple H were entering their inaugural feud in the main event scene, as Batista just turned on him and hence just ending Evolution as we knew it for the time being. But while they had a strong upper card at main event scene, the other great part about Raw during this time was the fact that they just had such a strong mid-card. And you saw guys in the mid-card like Shelton Benjamin, Chris Jericho, Christian, Chris Benoit, and Edge, and just other people who I'm missing. But Raw at this time, Kane, they just had a very, very, very strong mid-card. You could even make the case that Randy Orton had slid back into the upper mid-card at this point as he faced off against The Undertaker at this WrestleMania. So essentially what happened at WrestleMania 21 was the inaugural Money in the Bank ladder match. And at this time, if you guys remember, the Money in the Bank ladder match was held annually at WrestleMania. It did not yet have its own pay-per-view. And at this WrestleMania, it was a Raw exclusive match. So what we saw here was basically all the upper mid-card guys get thrown together in a ladder match for the Money in the Bank contract. And it was such a foreign concept. We didn't even know how this would work, how you would cash it in. The match featured Edge, Christian, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Kane, and Shelton Benjamin, who was the Intercontinental Champion at that time. Throughout the match, very good match. I suggest you guys go back and watch it. And it ended up with Chris Benoit on the ladder, seemingly ready to win the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match. But during the match, he had really got his arm messed up. So he's climbing the ladder very gingerly on one arm. Edge comes in the ring, smashes him in the bad arm with a steel chair, climbs the ladder, and unhooks the first ever Money in the Bank briefcase. And this set Edge on a very strong year as he really came into his own in 2005 as a top heel. Because in 2004, he was a babyface for much of it, had a program with Randy Orton over the Intercontinental Championship in 2004. So it was clear that following WrestleMania 21, giving him the Money in the Bank contract was a way to really push forward with Edge as a top heel. Because you got to remember, at this time on Monday Night Raw, Triple H had reigned supreme atop the heel part of the mountain, at least, of Monday Night Raw for almost 3 years running. He had been the world heavyweight champion, I would say, at least 80% of the time, save for a few short, brief runs by Benoit and Shawn Michaels and Randy Orton. And Batista just won the world heavyweight championship at that same pay-per-view. So they had to start looking towards the future. And 2005 was their first step in doing so in the main event, specifically with Edge. Now, to be quite honest, it took Edge quite a long time to get to the main event picture, even following that Money in the Bank championship. Sorry, guys. It's habit for me. Following his Money in the Bank contract victory. So following this pay-per-view, he obviously had a short, brief feud with Kane where he aligned himself with Lita. Then he had what I love, one of the most underrated feuds that I guess it kind of fell flat, but his feud and program with Matt Hardy in the summer of 2005, playing off real life events, was pretty damn cool, even though it was kind of lackluster in the end. So while Edge was on the ascent in 2005, John Cena was doing much of the same. He closed out his program with John Bradshaw Layfield on SmackDown. And then he was drafted over to Raw as him and Batista swapped places. Both world championships swapped brands. And it was a pretty big shift in the landscape of WWE. Personally, I think it's because Vince McMahon and company saw John Cena as the top guy ahead of Batista. That's why they made him switch to the flagship show Monday Night Raw. And right out of the gate, he engaged in a feud with Chris Jericho. I believe he defended the WWE Championship at Vengeance 2005 in a triple threat match with Christian and Chris Jericho, his first title defense as part of Monday Night Raw. Then he embarked on a program with Jericho just up until SummerSlam. Jericho ended up getting fired, aka pursuing his Fozzy career, and he was away from WWE for about 2 years after that. And then afterwards, Cena had a program with Kurt Angle, which lasted much of the fall of 2005, culminated at Survivor Series, and he ended up defending his WWE Championship in a Elimination Chamber match at New Year's Resolution 2006. And this match included the likes of Chris Masters, Carlito, Kane, Shawn Michaels, and Kurt Angle, along with John Cena. And if you guys don't remember, Carlito and Chris Masters were really kind of getting pushed as top young guys on Monday Night Raw. They were part of Team Raw in the inaugural Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series match. And I think I'm going to do a Rivalries edition on that as well, Raw versus SmackDown in 2005, because it's not kind of like the forced version as we see in today's WWE. It was more so of an organic program, but nonetheless. So we saw Kane in that match, who was one half of the World Tag Team Champions with Big Show, Shawn Michaels, and Kurt Angle. So what we saw in this one is Kurt Angle went out first, Shawn Michaels and Kane followed, and it came down to Carlito, Masters, and John Cena. John Cena started this match with Shawn Michaels, so he was a bloodied mess, and he was just getting double-teamed by Carlito and Chris Masters. Carlito turned on Chris Masters, got the pin, and then John Cena pinned Carlito for the roll-up, seemingly closing out the night as WWE champion, overcoming the odds. And by this point, John Cena was He was WWE champion for going on 10 months at this point. You know, he had won it back in, I believe it was in March that year, WrestleMania, or April. So it was almost a year. It was coming up on a year of John Cena being the WWE champion. But while we thought that John Cena was going to walk away from that pay-per-view as WWE champion, and just when we thought the show was over and John Cena would live to fight another day as WWE champion, Vince McMahon appeared.
This individual is cashing in his money and the bank privilege that he earned at WrestleMania. The WWE Championship match will take place right here, right now.
Oh my.
John Cena defends against Edge.
He's thinking.
Well, I thought, and I said it earlier tonight, are you kidding me? That Edge would use it at WrestleMania. But Edge is cashing in, and cashing it in big time with John Cena is at his weakest.
No.
Turn around, Johnny boy. Turn around. No. It's over.
Edge is just waiting on the WWE champ. It's waiting on him.
So there you have it. Edge with the inaugural Money in the Bank cash-in takes the championship away from John Cena. The first time the WWE Championship had changed hands in close to 10 months, as I had just said. And fun fact, and I believe you guys already knew this, Matt was in the crowd for that match and that pay-per-view. So a pretty cool bit of info there. I'm pretty sure Matt did a whole wrestling nostalgia based on this. So this was the kickoff to the Edge versus John Cena feud. But while it was the kickoff, it didn't really last long. The following night on Raw, Edge had the infamous live sex celebration, which, man, you want to talk about rated R superstar? That is just about as rated R as it gets. John Cena interrupted, and they embarked on a program that led to Royal Rumble 2006. And lo and behold, John Cena won back the WWE Championship less than a month later. And I guess if I look back at this objectively, I understand why they put the belt back on Cena right away. Because if you think about it, I know we think of John Cena now as being forced down our throats for the better part of 10 years and never losing pay-per-view matches and just basically a WWE version of Superman. There was still a lot of juice to be squeezed from the initial John Cena push at this time. And I know that may be crazy to say because he had just been on a near year-long run as WWE champion. Why put the belt back on him right away? But there was still a lot of runway to go with John Cena, because even though he had only been in the main event picture for a year, they really hadn't gotten him involved in very high-level feuds to this point. Like I said, on SmackDown, it was a 4-month-long program with John Bradshaw Layfield. He came over to Raw. He had a two-month-long program with Chris Jericho, who was no longer on the Monday Night Raw brand. Then he went toe-to-toe with Kurt Angle for 3 months, who by this time in January 2006 had jumped back over to SmackDown and once again had reclaimed the World Heavyweight Championship. So John Cena had yet to really engage in a feud that stuck. It was all kind of one and dones, and you saw what they did following him regaining the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble as he went into a pretty good and underrated program with Triple H leading into WrestleMania 22. And maybe they thought it was premature to put the strap on Edge. If I had to give an objective take on it, I think it's because they saw the potential by booking John Cena versus Triple H at WrestleMania 22. And at this time, not to say that Triple H had little runway left because he competed as a full-time competitor for about 4 years after this, but he wasn't a spring chicken. So you only had so many years left of Triple H in his absolute prime to go one-on-one with John Cena and main event a WrestleMania. And even more so, it's clear that they had plans to bring back D-Generation X in the summer of 2006, which we saw succeeding the WrestleMania in 2006. So, look, they clearly wanted to strike while the iron was hot, and they put the strap back on John Cena to go into a feud with Triple H heading into Mania 22. And while this was also the case, I'm sure that there was still a bit of hesitation to push forward with Edge as the top heel and arguably the top guy on Monday Night Raw. And, you know, I think by this time, Edge had done more than enough to prove that he was, by and large, a main event player on Monday Night Raw and in the WWE. But I could see the hesitation, possibly. So they made him engage in a feud with Mick Foley heading into WrestleMania 22. And I feel that the feud with Mick Foley and the match in particular at WrestleMania 22 with Mick Foley was the final test for Edge to see if he could actually be a legitimate main event player for Monday Night Raw and the WWE. Because like I said before, there was a spot at the top of the mountain for Edge to take. You know, Randy Orton had made the jump to SmackDown by this point. Kurt Angle was on SmackDown as well. Rey Mysterio, The Undertaker, all on SmackDown. When you looked at the Raw side of things, it was John Cena, Triple H. I guess you could make the case Shawn Michaels, but he was never really involved in the title picture at this time, had just started a feud with Vince McMahon. After that, there was a whole lot of nothing. You know, Benoit had gone back to SmackDown as well. So Jericho had just retired. So when you looked at Raw, it was just a whole lot of nothing in the mid-card. And as we had seen in, as I just talked about, in 2005, that Raw had a very strong mid-card, that really evaporated for numerous reasons by the time 2006 rolled around. So it was there for the taking for Edge, because after Cena and Triple H, there was not a lot of big time players there. So he had the match with Mick Foley, which Matt also reviewed on Wrestling Nostalgia. And that was just what a gory and just crazy hardcore match that was. Go back and watch it. One that Edge ultimately won. And at this point, he still had a perfect record at WrestleMania. So John Cena and Edge really stayed apart from one another for quite a few months after. They started the ECW relaunching as a permanent brand for WWE in the late spring of 2006, which ended up with Rob Van Dam challenging John Cena in June, I believe it was June 11th, 2006, at the One Night Stand pay-per-view. Rob Van Dam had won the second ever Money in the Bank briefcase. I want to say championship. I'm sorry, guys. He had won the second ever Money in the Bank briefcase at WrestleMania 22. And unlike Edge and unlike the majority of Money in the Bank winners, he booked a date far in advance to challenge Cena for the WWE championship. We saw Van Dam win at the One Night Stand pay-per-view against John Cena at the Bingo Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I remember there were signs saying that if Cena wins, we ride. And by this time, we really started to see the everyday crowd go against John Cena. I know this was a special case scenario with the ECW championship or the ECW pay-per-view. So it was a very anti-WWE crowd. But just on the regular, it became kind of commonplace to boo John Cena out of the building for even when he was against full-fledged heels. So Rob Van Dam walked out of the One Night Stand pay-per-view as WWE champion and taking that title belt to the ECW brand. At that same pay-per-view, Edge was tagging with Mick Foley to go in a hardcore match versus Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer, one of which him and Mick Foley won. And this is, again, a reason why he was the rated R superstar. He actually speared Beulah McGillicuddy and pinned her in the most offensive way possible to win that match, because right before the match started, they actually made it a six-man hardcore match, adding Beulah and Lita into the match. So go back and watch that. That was a gruesome match as well. Mick Foley got lit on fire. Terry Funk had his eye almost got gouged out by the barbed wire. It was just that was a great pay-per-view all in all. I remember Sabu and Rey Mysterio had a really intense Extreme Rules match for the World Heavyweight Championship as well. So while it seemed that Rob Van Dam was going to get the push to be potentially the face of the company, although he was on the recently relaunched ECW brand, some personal things happened. I believe he got stopped for a DUI, and WWE quickly pulled the plug on that. So ultimately what happened is that they had a triple threat match between Edge, John Cena, and Rob Van Dam on a Monday Night Raw for the WWE Championship. And I'm reading this off of the WWE.com's title history page. So if you think you've heard this before, I am reading this verbatim. So full disclosure there. John Cena was able to hit RVD with an attitude adjustment, but before he could make the cover, Edge came from out of nowhere and leveled Cena with the championship. With both men already knocked out, Edge covered RVD and stole the WWE championship from John Cena. So once the belt got put back on Edge at the beginning of July, this is when we got the first real program with Cena and Edge for a lengthy period of time. And I know that they had that month-long program at the beginning of the year after Edge cashed in, and then they had the match at the Royal Rumble. But like I said, that seemed almost premature. It seemed like WWE backpedaled on their original plans. Because how often do you see a guy win the championship, his first ever WWE championship win, and lose it at the succeeding pay-per-view? We never see it. We never see that. So I felt like they weren't quite sure if Edge was ready. But by the time this rolled around, they were ready to run with Edge. They brought the championship back to Monday Night Raw from ECW. Rob Van Dam also lost the ECW championship shortly thereafter to the Big Show. So his push, or seemingly main event push, was completely halted due to personal reasons. So then we saw Edge and John Cena basically main event Raw for the whole summer. They had a match at SummerSlam, which Edge won, and hitting John Cena in the back of the head with brass knucks, retaining the championship. And on a side note, this was a very, very good summer for wrestling. It was obviously the return of D-Generation X, and they had that lengthy program with the McMahons, which ended up culminating at Unforgiven 2005, which coincidentally was the culmination of John Cena versus Edge's program. So to give you a bit of a backstory here, or a bit of a setup rather, is that Unforgiven was held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, which, as most of you probably know, is the hometown of One Edge. So you could be sure, like, between the hometown of Edge and just almost the universal hate for John Cena at this point, that the crowd would be strongly behind the heel and vastly against the top babyface in John Cena. And to make matters worse for John Cena, the match for the WWE Championship was held in a TLC format, which is the bread and butter of Edge and always has been. And just some of the things leading up to this match, like there was John Cena throwing Edge into the Long Island Sound. Edge actually rebranded the WWE Championship because it was the spinner at that time. Instead of the WWE logo in the middle, he had the Rated R Superstar logo that spun in the middle. So Edge was really playing the heel character well and was really coming into his own at this point. So they go into Unforgiven, the big blow off to this feud, the WWE Championship match in a TLC match in Edge's hometown, all of the momentum swinging in Edge's favor. And let's take a listen to how that match ended. So as you heard, John Cena reclaims the WWE Championship, handing Edge his first ever loss in a TLC ladder match. And if you guys couldn't make it out over just the audio, John Cena stacked two tables, one on top of each other. They both climbed the ladder and John Cena was able to beat Edge at his own match in Toronto in his home crowd to claim his third WWE Championship, en route to getting a total 16 if you combine that and the World Heavyweight Championship. So following this rivalry, John Cena went on to have a short program with the Big Show. He also had a relatively short program with Umaga, faced him at that following Royal Rumble, and then main evented WrestleMania 23 with Shawn Michaels. While Edge aligned himself with Randy Orton and formed the inaugural version of Rated RKO as they went on a lengthy program with D-Generation X for the remainder of 2006. And look, it took Edge about another 10 months, I would say, maybe a bit shorter, to get back into the main event title picture. Because even though he, at least in my mind, proved himself to be a 100% main event player during the summer of 2006 with his great program with John Cena, it still took a little less than a year for WWE to further fully pull the trigger on him. And what ended up happening is that he took the Money in the Bank briefcase away from Mr. Kennedy. He cashed in on The Undertaker in June of 2007, and became the world heavyweight champion for the first time in his career and made the jump over to SmackDown. And that's when Edge really kind of caught fire as a true main event player, when he went over to the Blue Brand as the world heavyweight champion. Obviously, he main evented WrestleMania 24 with The Undertaker. The following WrestleMania, he was in the triple threat match with The Big Show and John Cena, which surrounded the whole Vicky Guerrero, La Familia angle. But this story and this program between Edge and John Cena was important for a lot of ways. And first off, I think it was very important for John Cena because it was the first true main event personal rivalry for Cena. I know originally it was John Bradshaw, Layfield, but that always kind of just seemed a bit forced for me. Like, John Cena was the only top babyface left on the SmackDown roster at that time, and SmackDown lacked a lot of true top heels in late 2004, early 2005. They had already gone down that road with Kurt Angle. Then through the summer of 2005, he had various rivalries with Jericho and Kurt Angle and whatnot. Had that short program with Triple H building up to Mania 2006, mind you, WrestleMania 22. But the one with Edge that started at New Year's Resolution, the cash-in, they put it on the back burner on the bit and then revisited it in the summer of 06, I truly believe was John Cena's first top feud. Because if you look back at John Cena, obviously you think of Randy Orton, more recently AJ Styles, The Rock, but you rarely think of Triple H and JBL. The first big rivalry you think of when you think of John Cena as a main event player is against Edge. And as we know, they revisited it several times in the following few years. And as for Edge, it was his first program as a main event guy. I think we could argue that his best main event run and his best program in a main event scene was with The Undertaker. They had many classics with one another. Also, him and Chris Jericho had a few good matches. But again, John Cena and Edge, I really feel, used each other to propel one another as into true main event players. Obviously, John Cena was much more of the main event player beforehand, and Edge was the much more beneficiary of the rivalry. But you can't diminish what Edge meant for the John Cena character either, as legitimizing him as a top babyface in WWE for the succeeding decade. And I know a lot of people don't like John Cena. I'm not the biggest fan of John Cena. I don't hate him as much as most do. But you have to admit that he is one of, if not the biggest star the company has ever seen, especially when you consider since 2005. So listen, guys, that's just about it for rivalries this week. Be sure to send in your requests to Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit him up on Instagram, or you can follow me on Twitter and send me a DM like a few of you have already had, at ADeMarco25. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Feel free to reach out, and I'll catch you next week.